Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
And Bishop Ben.
Hello, everyone.
So I was going to do this topic on preparing for death, and I thought, you know, that's just a little too morbid. We can save that for closer to October when we get ready for Halloween.
Well, there you go.
That's bad.
So tonight we're just going to kind of wing it. We're going to do the Seinfeld thing, a show about nothing.
Free for all.
And just kind of see where it goes and what comes up. There's been all kinds of stuff in the news, and there's been all kinds of stuff online going on, and stuff in the church and life in general. Our denomination, the Old Catholic Churches International, just wrapped up our every five-year synod. They continued my lifelong posting of being presiding bishop because nobody decided to give me a vote of no confidence. Poor saps.
I thought about it for a few seconds.
Right. So, that was probably the biggest news. We had some good talks from Father Jeff Hood, and he talked to us about his work with death row inmates and how he came to that position after watching an execution years ago. Jesus loved even those being executed, and they deserved spiritual comfort and guidance up to the last. And he's also been a huge advocate for death row inmates and trying to get the death penalty overturned and in many states. And the next day after his talk, there was an article in the Oklahoman about his work, and he relayed that while he was out doing some yard work a couple of weeks ago, this guy in this big Ford F-350 pulled up in his front yard and yelled out his name, and he turned. And the guy made a motion like a gun to him and said, "I'm coming for you very soon," and drove off. And that's the kind of thing he has to deal with on a regular basis because of his work advocating for those on death row. I thought that was very interesting, very scary. I don't know that I would have maintained my composure quite as well as he did in that situation, but he's kind of gotten used to it at this point, I guess. But we also heard from our Bishop, Bishop Jim, up in Philadelphia about the great work that they're doing up there to help the homeless and to continue growing the school and cemetery and church there in Flower Town. And and then they heard from me about nothing, and then and then heard from Father Castro down in Argentina about how that they are now active in five different countries in Latin America after having started with just one 5 years ago. So it was a good synod. We had a great time. We enjoyed ourselves. Got to meet virtually with everyone. And hopefully next time around we'll get to meet in person again. And that'll be great. But so that was what we were doing for the past week, Bishop Ben and I. And Reverend Mark has been just absolutely busy all week long between work and church. And yep. It's kept him out of trouble, so that's good.
I would go that far, but it has definitely kept me busy. We'll go with the busy part.
So we've been...
Funny, I was listening to Father Jeff Hood, and what spoke out to me mostly when he was speaking about his ministry and his path that he has walked, he said one thing that stuck in my mind about how do you want to be? Do you want to stay clean, or do you want to sit in the mud like Jesus did?
Yes, very true.
That stuck out of my mind, and it gave me a lot to think about as far as how I run my ministry.
Well, and you know, I think it's important, you know, even people like Pope Francis have tried to stress this idea that the church kind of has to go to the people where they are. You know, that we can't just stay clean all the time. We have to get our hands dirty in doing the work right. of the gospel. And, you know, that means getting down into the gutter with the people who need it most. You know, the homeless, the poor, the drug addicts, the sex workers, you know, all the people that society views as outcasts. I mean, Jesus routinely ate with tax collectors, which were kind of the scum of the earth of Jesus's day, because not only were they taxing you, but typically they were crooked too. So
right. They
would, you know, jack up your tax bill and then skim that off the top, you know, for themselves. So they were very much hated in Jesus's day, much like they are today here in the United States. But he routinely ate with them, spent time with them, spent time with fishermen who were considered kind of the lower class as well. You know, these were the people that they stank from being out on the water all the time. They tended to be rather crude, less educated individuals. And, you know, Jesus surrounded himself with those people, with fishermen. And of course, the plethora of sex workers that Jesus spent time with in the New mm-hmm. Testament, you know. So we as a church really have to get to a point where we're seeing people through Jesus' eyes. And that requires us to get down into the gutter sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me, we even saw a post as our church is the Old Catholic Church International. We saw a post from Bishop St. George's parish where Father Liam posted some pictures of the homeless ministry. And you saw the work that they're doing down there.
Right.
And if I believe correctly, I read it correctly, he said you couldn't wear open-toed shoes because of the stuff they walk through.
Right.
You know, that's just a sobering aspect of ministry.
Yeah, their ministry in Kensington, Pennsylvania, which is a bedroom community of Philadelphia. Kensington is basically the drug center of Philadelphia. And you literally, as you walk down the street, there are heroin needles all up and down the sidewalks. You have to be very careful where you step, where you stand, because you could end up, you know, stepping on or standing on a heroin needle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful, and yet they go down there and serve, you know, hot food and stuff to people who that might be their only meal for several days, you know. is the food that they deliver to Kensington.
Jesus constantly was demonstrating the desire to break through the stigmas and stereotypes and really get to humanity,
right,
where humanity was. You know, church had kind of, or, you know, the religious groups of the day had really sanitized their worship, a lot like it is in America now. And it was very much, very cliquish, very,
oh yes,
very, you gotta, you know, be a part of our groups. And we see that a lot in various circles, even churches, you know, 30, 40 years ago that broke out of mainline denominations and became, you know, independent, have fallen over into that trap where they lose their genuine desire to reach humanity.
Right.
And I was having a conversation not too long ago with some people about major ministries and ministers that I've been around and been exposed to on a personal level, and how so many of them just treat regular people with disdain because you're not on their quote-unquote level.
Right.
And, you know, Jesus, having come from the throne room of heaven, showed us that he was willing to get on the level of humanity wherever it was, whether yes, it was the fishermen, tax collectors, the woman at the well, the thieves on the cross, even the religious that had their minds and spirits closed to who God truly is. Jesus gave them time, one of the most valuable commodity anyone has, and poured into them as best he could. You know,
right,
there were some people that not even Jesus could reach.
Right.
And I know that may sound foreign to some people, but there's plenty of passages where Jesus either was in his town and could do no mighty works, or dealing with the Pharisees of the day, the religious leaders of the day, and couldn't make heads or tails or inroads, if you will, with the majority of them. Not every one of them, but the majority of them. And it really speaks to what the gospel is about, and that's reaching out to humanity. That's why one of his final sayings was, go into all the world and preach good news.
Right.
And he didn't exclude folks.
No.
He didn't say if they were fishermen, if they were uneducated or only educated. He didn't say, you know, if they had a certain skin color. He said, go into all the world,
right,
and share.
And all still means all. You know, that's a problem I think that we see tremendously, especially in the American church, is we like the idea of going out and ministering to people, but not to all people. You know, there are certain people that we see as beneath us, less than. And I think the true test of your faith actually comes in how you treat the least of these.
Yeah.
You know.
And even those that we have personality-wise difficulty connecting,
right,
with. Yeah. There's people that we just naturally don't mesh with and connect with. And, you know, it's a challenge, but the love of God is there to push us over that challenge.
Right. And it can certainly be a challenge, especially as there's less and less civility in our world. It can be a real challenge sometimes to meet those people and to see the divine in them.
Right.
But that's what we're called to do.
That's right.
You know? and we're called to see them as fellow human beings, treat them as such. There's a lot of dehumanization that still goes on in society.
Yeah.
You know, we're wrapping up the Olympics today in France, which, by the way, the U.S. Basketball team won gold.
Oh, did they?
Yay.
So, that's good.
Nice. Very nice.
But they, you know, we've seen that dehumanization even in the Olympic Games with, you know, the Albanian, Algerian boxer.
Yep.
Who was dehumanized for looking too masculine, you know, even though they are a woman, you know, and that, I'd like to say that kind of thing surprised me, but it doesn't, you know, and sadly, it was a lot of people of faith who were out there, you know, championing this call against her. And I'm like, I don't think Jesus would have had a problem with how they looked. I mean,
no,
he wouldn't have cared. You know, they're another human being. And so Jesus would have shown them love and respect and kindness regardless. And but we find that very difficult in modern faith practice. We find that very difficult to see the person as truly human. It's the othering that keeps happening.
Well, and, you know, attacking something that you don't understand or that's different from you, and when clearly our job is, and or our being, not our job, that's a bad way to say it, but our being, our spiritual makeup is to embrace those that are totally different.
Right.
You know, even Jesus was embracing folks that didn't act like a believer.
Right.
Didn't follow after his teachings, you know. Still embrace the Judases of the world, the Peters of the world, those that would run away from him at his most critical moment, and knowing that they would, and then post-resurrection demonstrating still an acceptance.
Right.
You know, they had demonstrated and shown that they were people that would run away from, and basically we're like, we don't know this Jesus guy. We
aren't talking right.
And Jesus is, you know, specifically showing up to them saying, hey, I'm here. I love you still. Let me give you the even deeper understanding of what just happened. People that had just turned away and ran away from the situation.
Right.
And he's like, let me talk to you on a deeper level. So the level in which, you know, Jesus taught us to act versus how a lot of quote-unquote church people, I can't call some of them Christians because they're not Christ-like and not following after Christ, but the way a lot of church goers are acting just makes me shake my head going, I don't understand.
Right.
You know, yes, they're different, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong. That doesn't necessarily mean they're in error. That doesn't necessarily, it just means they're different than me. And that's okay.
Right.
Think of all the various species of flowers and trees and dogs and cats and different things like that that are just different. And that's okay. They're different. God made them different.
Well, and I think that it's interesting too, the Olympics are kind of an apt message if we get past all the controversy over boxers and whether or not the opening ceremony was making fun of Christians or not. One of the things that the Olympics shows us is that, you know, diversity is a strength. You know, all these different people from all different parts of the world coming together to compete and showing off their strength and their abilities, you know. And no one country is going to take home all the gold. You know, it's going to be different countries because some people are better at some things than others.
Yep.
Some people have gifts that are different, but that makes them no less important. And so the Olympics are kind of a great Christian metaphor to some degree, you know, that even in the midst of life, people around you, just because they have different talents and different gifts, doesn't make them less than. It actually makes them just as important as you are, because those gifts and talents come in handy in other ways. You know, I'm not perfect at everything. I need people around me who have strengths in areas where I'm weak. You know, and so I call upon people around me to help bring that project or bring that process to completion through their strengths and talents. It's kind of like what St. Paul said, you know, not everybody can be a hand. Not everybody can be a foot, you know.
Right.
We all make up different parts of the body. And that diversity is strength.
Yeah, great passage to draw from is the understanding that not all of us can be it. You know, right. We have to have a connection. We must be connected. We must first be connected to the divine and that divine love, allowing that strength to come from the Spirit, but also to one another. We are designed for relationships. We are designed for relation, you know, very deep and personal, and then very, you know, surface, very spiritual connection. But we're all designed for those relationships to come together, right, and draw strength from each other. And it just fascinates me that, you know, we have groups of people that'll look at others that, you know, make it all about them, or look at other people that, you know, think that it's all, you know, they're all the wisdom in the world that is needed. And it's like, but are you, you know, are you really, are you, you know, we know that's not true. We have to have each other. We rely on each other. I can't do it all. And a lot of churches, you know, a lot of pastors make people think they can do it all. A lot of churches expect their pastors to do it all, and translates over into various job situations. But we are designed to connect to one another, to feed and to work off of each other, and to support one another. And great analogy in Scripture about the body of Christ.
And the interesting thing, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, those people that are difficult or hard to get along with, you stub your toe, you don't cut it off.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
not supposed to.
It hurts like heck. You might even break your little toe or whatever when you stump it. But you don't cut it off. You doctor it. You nurse it back to health. You get it back to where it needs to be. And the same is true of people that are difficult in our lives sometimes. People we don't see eye to eye with. Even people that are sometimes, you know, very self-centered, very self-absorbed. It's our job to try to nurse them back to health and bring them back to a place where they can be fully functional in the body of Christ. And no, Bishop Ben, you do not put embalming fluid on the toe.
Oh, come on. Jeez.
Embalming fluid is not the solution to every problem.
It is for me. But anyways.
So he wants to sneak that death topic in somehow tonight.
Just itching over there to do it.
Tell you.
Sure,
that's the funeral director in him, yes.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, we we have to have the different parts, and even the parts that are difficult and sometimes painful. Lord knows when I wake up and the arthritis in my spine is giving me all kinds of trouble, I certainly want to remove it, but that would not be productive.
Well, even the Son of God pulled people around him to help, to right. help spread that message. And, you know, if Jesus had to do it, who am I? So, and it also shows the desire for, from God, that we are involved in that divine plan
right.
of spreading love and making sure peace comes, grace and mercy to the world. You know, Jesus, God could have easily, in the divine plan, sent angelic beings to walk among us to do that. Right. And we're just here existing. But God chose to work through us and use us to do that, to spread that message. Excuse me. So it's so vital that we understand that we are all connected.
Right.
We're all to be connected. And not some perverse way, but in the exchange of love, in the exchange of community, dwelling together, pulling from each other's strengths and plan and the plan of God.
Right.
So, you know, I don't understand these people that want to ostracize the difference. And, you know, church people are some of the most guilty at doing it. And that is to look at a situation or somebody that's not dressed a certain way
right.
based on their locale, right. where they live, and going, oh, they're weird, they can't be of God because they don't dress like us.
Right. I like what Thomas Merton said years ago, and that is that we are called to love everyone without asking if they're worthy.
Favorite quotes.
That is so important to understand and know. It's not our job to determine whether someone's worthy of love, but rather just love them. Just show them kindness and peace and gentleness and, you know, be there for them. When you're talking about people coming in not wearing the right clothes or whatever, reminded of the story about a new pastor. And
well, this is a better story than the one I told a long months ago.
So this new pastor shows up at the church dressed blue jeans and a tattered t-shirt, and his hair's unkempt and his beard's unkempt and everything, and he walks in and he gets stopped right inside the church by somebody, and they're like, you know, sir, I'm sorry, you can't be here because, you know, you're not dressed properly. You're not, you know, you have an odor and your hair's a mess, and yeah. And so he insists that, you know, he's been invited by the pastor and all that stuff. And so he goes on into the sanctuary, and someone else stops him and is like, you know, sir, you can't be here. You're not properly attired and all this. And so finally, after two or three people do that to him, he disappears. He just disappears. And the service starts, and, you know, the deacon gets up to welcome the new pastor. And across the stage comes this guy that looks like he's homeless, he's unkempt, his shirt's messed up, his hair's messed up, his beard's messed up. The guy that everybody told him he wasn't welcome there. And he walks across the stage, and he steps to the podium, and he says, I'm your new pastor, and I wanted to see what kind of church I'm the pastor of. That's why I dressed this way this morning, is I wanted to see how you all would treat someone who came in off the street. And of course, everyone sat in stunned silence because, you know, many of them had told him to get lost. Paul makes it clear that sometimes when we greet people like that, we're entertaining angels unawares. You know, these are angels, Paul said, that were sent to essentially test our faith, see if we're actually living what we claim to live. And we sometimes fail at that because we see them as lesser than.
That's right.
You know.
If I may.
Sure,
know,
go ahead.
I'm thinking about that. And I didn't mean to interrupt, but it rings home because I remember when I was starting out as a young deacon in the Catholic Church, I remember this homeless guy walked in,
right,
and everybody ran him off. I walked off from the altar and went back and retrieved him. And then at the end of the mass, he asked me, he says, "Young man, why did you do that?" I said, "Because what if you were Jesus walking in and we didn't know it and we turned Jesus away?"
Right.
I said, "We don't turn anybody away." I said, "Jesus didn't turn anybody away at his table."
I tell the story every Good Friday about the adventure we had several years ago at St. Albans, where this African-American gentleman came in, obviously homeless, and he smelt of alcohol, you know, he had been drinking. And he came in on Good Friday, and he just stood in the back of church for a few minutes. It was about half an hour before service was to start. And for those that aren't Catholic or don't understand, on Good Friday, everything is cleared out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
All the altar cloths are gone, the candles are gone, the tabernacle's empty. You know, the church is bare because, you know, we're commemorating Jesus' death. And so we remove anything that beautifies the space, anything that may bring joy and that kind of thing out of the sanctuary. And he stands there for a little while, and I go back to talk to him, and he's talking about how bare the church looks, how empty it looks and everything. And I explained to him, you know, why it looked that way and everything. And he got kind of emotional about it. We sat down and talked, and he told me about how he had served in Iraq, and he came home and he wasn't the same, and his family couldn't handle it. And so he now was living on the streets and had no place to go and no money for food and that kind of thing. And so, you know, we gave him some supplies and stuff, and I talked with him, and I said, you know, he got ready to leave, and I was like, you know, you can stay for the service. I mean, you don't have to leave. And he's like, "No, I'm dirty. I'm wet from, because it's been sprinkling and raining through the day." And he said, "I just don't feel comfortable staying. I don't want to mess up your pews." And I said, "Pews can be fixed. I mean, I'm not worried about that. You know, if you want to stay, you stay." And he insisted he was going to go. And I said, "Well, is there anything else I can do for you?" And he says, "Can you give me a hug? It's been so long since anybody touched me." And so I gave him a big hug, and he just cried, and he left. A few minutes later, maybe 30 seconds to a minute later, Luna comes in. She says, "I found a $5 bill in my wallet. I want to go give it to him." So she walks out front of the church, and she looks up and down the street. And for those that don't know, it's like a mile in each direction you can see. I mean, there's no obstacles. And so she looks both ways. She can't find him anywhere. He's gone. Just disappeared. And so I tell people, Jesus came to church on Good Friday. You know, he came in the sign of a homeless man. But he came to church. Mm-hmm. And that's happened a few times to us where people have come and, you know, inexplicably you can't find them afterwards or whatever, but they come and they are usually homeless people, or they're people that are down on their luck or downtrodden, or people that have been thrown out of other churches. And I view it as a test of, are we actually walking the faith we claim to walk? You know,
right.
Are we actually going to put into practice what Jesus teaches us? and I hope we pass. You know, I hope that we as a church never get to the point where we're like that one church that keeps telling them to leave, you know. But I also understand that it takes growth and it takes time, and not everybody is at the same spot spiritually.
Yeah.
You know, so there has to be that constant work with people to bring them to that point in their spiritual walk, where they're able to view each person they meet as a human being deserving of love.
Well, we forget sometimes that part of, quote-unquote, preaching the gospel is less about the words we say and the rhetoric we give from the pulpit, and it's the example. Sometimes people that aren't at the level that you are or hope that they will get to, instead of jumping up and down and screaming at them and telling them how horrible they are, just keep living it in front of them.
Right.
The example will be registered, and if we trust that God's Spirit will work on them on in their hearts, then it's the example that they need to see.
Right.
It's what they need to hear. And from the Spirit. But so often we try, pastors try to manipulate through the pulpit to try to correct behavior.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, speak the gospel, share the gospel, let them take what you're offering and decide for themselves if they're going to partake of it, make it a part of them. But also live that. You know, some of the, and we've got a way too much of the, you know, we're people jumping up down saying we're Christians, we're just like Jesus, and then they leave service on a Sunday or a Wednesday night or whatever after worshiping and hearing the scriptures, hearing the songs, saying the songs, receiving communion, and then going to restaurants or going to the grocery store and treating people like trash. And I just don't understand how we can emerge from those situations other than we aren't listening or paying attention, or we're not allowing the Holy Spirit, the divine power of God, to touch and tap our heart and say, hey, make that a part of you. It's a better way to live.
Right.
It's nourishment to you when you do that. As you know, because we want everybody just to heed the words, but some, you know, sometimes they, you know, they have to take that scripture that says, do you not realize that you're an epistle read by all people?
Which is not, of course, a wife of the apostle.
Not the wife of the apostle.
And so,
definitely an inside joke here.
Yes. Well, it's like Francis's, St. Francis of Assisi's message summed up to his brothers, and that is, preach the gospel always, use words if necessary.
That's right.
Yeah, he didn't actually say that as it is, but it's a paraphrase of his entire message. We have to actually live what we believe.
Correct.
You know, it's easy to preach it. You know, you can find a street preacher anywhere in the United States who will stand on a soapbox and preach to people around him. But is he actually living what he's preaching? You know, that's where the real test of faith comes in. And the test of faith doesn't come sometimes sitting in the church pew. It comes standing in the Walmart line. You know, when the person in front of you is in the line that says 20 items or less and they got 500 items, you know, I mean, that's when the test of faith is.
Thank you, Lord, for patience.
Right? And so, or it's when going to the restaurant and the waiter or waitress just cannot get your order right, or cannot get to you in time, or in a timely fashion that you think they should get to you. You know, it's those times. It's when you're walking down the street and somebody stops you and goes, hey, I haven't eaten in several days. Can you spare a buck or two? You know, and you know, I have come across those situations so often.
Yep.
And I have help someone on the street needing help, not expecting anything in exchange, not expecting anything in return. But far too often what ends up happening is I stop and I talk to them and I learn their story and learn their struggle, and I walk away better for it.
That's right.
Because now not only do I have a friend, but I know more about what they're going through, and I'm able to better relate to them and others in their situation.
And it also reminds us of, you know, the blessings that are on our lives, how we are. We're blessed to turn around and help those people.
Right.
And to be thankful simultaneously to God for what's at work in our lives and what God has blessed us with. Not to be haughty about it or think that we're better, but just to, you know, God, thank you for blessing me. Thank you for empowering me to turn around and either, you know, hug somebody that's that has been unlovable, or, you know, give somebody a sandwich that was starving, or just some time to somebody that needed,
right,
to know that they were valued enough. And sometimes that's greater than anything that we can buy or, you know, hand money off to. It's just so that somebody knows that you value them enough to pour time into them.
Right.
You know, we're all about investing in America, if you want to say investing time.
Right.
And, you know, when you're giving of your time, you're deeming that thing that you're pouring it into of great value. And right. So it's, that means so much more. And I am thankful that God has me in places that enable me to turn the grace and the mercy into an opportunity to give out to those who haven't had that grace and mercy in a long time.
That's so true. I used to find sitting in the benches at Walmart to be those great times.
Yeah.
Because my wife would drag me to Walmart. I loathe going to Walmart.
Same.
But she would drag me along. And so after about half an hour of wandering aimlessly through Walmart with her, I'd be like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go sit on a bench. They don't have benches anymore in Walmarts, by the way.
No, they don't. They removed them.
I'd go sit on the metal benches, and invariably somebody would sit next to me and start talking. And those are those moments to invest time, because, you know, they are people who many times just need somebody to listen. They need to vent. They need a moment to speak what's on their heart and mind. And the same is true of Waffle House at 2 a.m. If you really want to find talkative people who really want to talk, if you're bored and want to spend some time, Waffle House at 2 a.m. is a great time to do that.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And they will come in, usually from the bars, and they're ready to pour their heart out to somebody. And I have sat many a time at 2 a.m. in a Waffle House talking with people. And a lot of times not even eating anything, just sitting there with a cup of coffee and, you know, listening to, you know, people talk.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And
some characters walk in there.
I tell you what. And it's a real blessing to me, too. For those that have never done that, have never experienced that, it can be a real blessing to make a connection with someone else and to talk with them and to be trusted enough to have them open up and talk about their lives, talk about what's bothering them, what's going on. And many times I don't offer any advice because they're not looking for advice. They're just looking to vent. And most of the time, by the time they're done, they've already solved their problem. They've already worked out their solution. You're just there to be that sounding board. And that's great. That's a wonderful feeling. And so I would encourage you, if you've never done it, to go and experience the Waffle House at 2 a.m. That's a that is certainly a great adventure.
That happens to me often. You know, I'll go out to the club or something with friends, and of course most people in the community know that I pastor the MCC church, and
right,
inevitably somebody will come up and share something, or you know, they may never come to our church, but they're reverend, can you remember my mom or aunt or whatever, you know, dog Fido, in your prayers. And you know, they'll open up a little bit, and kindness is something that most everybody will receive, and if you just offer a little bit of it, it's amazing that it's how much of how many doors that kindness will unlock. Just kindness,
right?
And because we're so geared towards we're definitely a fast-paced society anymore, and we want everything at the speed of light, and we're moving past folks so fast. We're, a lot of people are interested in what you can do for me. So when you show genuine kindness and a genuine love, it really catches their attention,
right?
And you have to, you know, you got to want to thank God for empowering you to do that. And that might be the one thing that pulls them through whatever it is, you know, whatever devastation they're going through, or whatever right. they're, some people may be thinking of ending their lives or harming themselves. And that little bit of grace, love, and kindness staves it or enables them to get the help they need.
Right.
You know, keeps it at bay until they get the help they need. So never underestimate that power of love. That's just a simple kindness. And right. it doesn't take much effort. Just listening or hugging somebody or letting them know that you appreciate them or whatever. And, you know, I just think that's the life of Christ.
I think it's what we're all called to do, you know. And so, well, this has been a great episode, considering we start off with no topic.
Vegetable soup episode.
And
stir the pot till the letters start making
sense. Yeah. I'll end with this joke. I saw the other day. It was a video, and so a guy was eating vegetable soup. You mentioned that, and it came up in his spoon, the name Jada. Huh. And he looks at it, and then all of a sudden the Will Smith clip from the Oscars comes up with Will yelling, "Keep my wife's name out of your mouth."
Yeah, oh, so, Lord.
You have to be careful sometimes with vegetable soup.
Oh, my goodness. That was a dad joke if I ever heard
that. Was a dad joke, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, I so appreciate you all joining us tonight for this edition of Expanding Your Faith. Thank you, Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben.
Thank you for hosting us.
Yeah, for having you all here tonight. It's always a pleasure and a blessing. And we'll be back next week with another exciting adventure. Remember, the end of August will be the end of our season, and we'll be off the whole month of September. And then we'll be back in October to begin again with season 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be really cool. So until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.